This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Stefan Halper, a senior fellow in the Department of Politics and International Studies at the University of Cambridge in England. He's a veteran of the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations, serving in both the State Department and the White House during those capacities. His brand new book is The Beijing Consensus, How China's Authoritarian Model Will Dominate the 21st Century. And, Steph, it's great to have you with us again.
It's great to talk to you again, Greg.
Well, even the title of your book describes kind of the shift in the way global thinking is happening here. You talk in the book about how for a long time there was the Washington Consensus about how developing nations would want the U.S. model, free markets leading to more freedom among the people, and eventually democracy would take root. Obviously, China is following a different path, and you make the case that on the present course, we're looking at a lot of developing nations following the Chinese model of allowing some free markets, but a very heavy hand from the central government. Explain why that's so appealing to some of these developing nations.
Well, it's appealing in the first instance because the Washington Consensus that you described hasn't worked. A lot of these leaders of third world countries have turned around and seen higher rates of infant mortality than when they began, lower literacy rates than when they started, less growth in employment than was promised. And what's happened is that the Washington Consensus, which was essentially a very well-meaning set of proposals designed to move these countries towards political reform and towards transparency and rational use of the budget, there was too much corruption, not enough transparency, no follow-up, and the result was that the promised progress didn't happen. The Chinese walked right through an open door. They provided hard currency loans, no questions asked, no demands for transparency or reform, and in return they took these massive resources like oil, copper, gold, and so on. So these countries are now locked in a kind of commercial embrace with China, and they are very impressed with China's rise as a third world country to the top of global power. So China becomes something that people admire, that people want to emulate. And we are dealing with a problem of the China story being very attractive, and the American story not quite so attractive.
It seemed, though, a generation ago, Steph, that especially during the Cold War, there were two competing models about how a government ought to be run. There was the decentralized version of the West led by the United States and, of course, the centralized version promoted by the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc. How did China sort of blend the two together so that they could keep the heavy hand over their people but still definitely seek to open markets and create an economic boom for itself?
The Chinese watched the Soviet collapse very, very carefully. And then they watched the various revolutions across Eastern Europe. And what they saw was a process in which politics was liberalized and the market was allowed to grow and prosper. The liberalization of politics is what they believe caused the Soviet Union to collapse. So they've gradually proceeded with a program which has kept an iron hand on the politics, administered it through the Communist Party, and allowed for gradual liberalization of the markets. So now what you've got are people running private companies who are members of the Communist Party, people who are very wealthy, literally billionaires, who are members of the Communist Party because the party is not an ideological or philosophical statement. There's nothing, Mao Zedong and Joe Stalin wouldn't recognize this party at all. It is really a management structure which facilitates the state's interest and coordinates that with large corporate initiatives. So you have China buying a foreign oil company. The state moves to support that purchase. Bank of China falls in line, providing the financing. And there you go. You've got a Chinese acquisition. It's it's a very interesting process. It's been done very delicately. You know, we used to think that middle-class people would eventually develop very strong interests, which in turn would be reflected by factions and then political parties, and then you've got democracy. The Chinese have stopped that process right at the point when the interests are translated to factions. They've taken those interests and incorporated them back into the Communist Party.
Steph, you describe in the book that China right now is in kind of the midst of a Faustian bargain. As long as the economy is booming over there, things are okay, but they desperately fear a popular revolt if the economy were ever to take a downturn. So how do they plan to keep this going, and what happens if it doesn't?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, it's a bargain. It's a devil's bargain. China has to grow at about 8%. If it doesn't grow at 8%, there's a good chance people are thrown out of their jobs and go onto the streets, and the first thing they're going to demonstrate against is the government. So the iron spine running through the Communist Party in Beijing is fear of chaos. In order to avoid that, in order to keep growing at 8%, which is, by the way, quite a healthy growth rate, affect relations with countries across the developing world who have resources to sell, oil, gold, copper, and so on. Now, China is a latecomer to this game, so they have to offer better terms, and they do. They offer those terms in two ways. First, they offer very low interest loans to the governments to get the resources out of the ground or out from under the ocean. And secondly, they promise they won't interfere with internal politics, which is something we mentioned a moment ago, that the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund feel is very important, that you need to have reforms. Chinese don't insist on that. So they continue to cultivate and expand their relationships across Africa, and they now deal with all 53 countries, and across the Middle East. And they now, by the way, are Saudi Arabia's largest client for oil, and across Latin America and so on. That's what they're doing. It's a constant process of acquiring new contracts to exploit resources. And in the course of that, they develop commercial relations with these nations, and they then co-opt them politically. That's what we've got to worry about. We have got to worry about a growing number of third world countries that admire China's example and reflect China's values, which are antithetical to our own, unsympathetic to American concepts of freedoms of assembly and belief and political freedoms. So we are moving towards a kind of, as it were, ideological clash, and it could be very serious.
Steph, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Greg.
The book is The Beijing Consensus, How China's Authoritarian Model Will Dominate the 21st Century. The author is Stephen Halper, Senior Fellow in the Department of Politics and International Studies at the University of Cambridge. He's also a veteran of the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.